You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. Journey into a wondrous land of boundaries of data and imagination. That signpost up ahead, your next stop, Twilight Zone Commentaries.
Happy New Year, and welcome to the second commentary of the Talking Twilight Zone Commentaries. Time enough at last. I'm your host, Robert, or one of the co-hosts of the Talking Twilight Zone group. We should be getting back next following episode after this will be Nick of Time. Bobby and Lynn on their marriage. Congratulations. It's nice to know that Twilight Zone can bring people together. So, again, many heartfelt wishes for both of you. And I wanted to make a comment about the Twilight Zone marathon that ran December 31st and January the 1st. Some things I kind of disagreed with, basically, the way they had this set up. You would think doing a Twilight Zone marathon that maybe you would do the pilot episode and then maybe end it with the last episode of the series. Well, they only did 88 episodes anyway, out of the 156 for the marathon. But what interests me was they didn't run the pilot episode January the 1st. And it was the Bewitching Pool that they ran January the 1st, 5 p.m. And that was the final episode of the Twilight Zone series. And then the pilot ran at 8:30 p.m. on January the 1st, which is Where Is Everybody? And I would have thought that they would at least had Where Is Everybody? A classic, of course, at the opening of the marathon, and ended it with the Bewitching Pool at the end. The things that they left out, too, was all of Season 4. And reason being is because Season 4, the Twilight Zone tried to do an hour, which didn't quite work, and then they went back to the half-hour format in Season 5. So they ran, looks like, the first, second, third, and fifth season, and they kind of jumbled it together. I mean, you know, they showed Living Doll, Stop at Willoughby, you know, a lot of the ones that we know, the After Hours, but also they threw in kind of the ones that we weren't too crazy about, like Mr. Beavis, the Last Flight. They, December the 31st, they ran The Hitchhiker. They put some of the not-so-great ones with the great ones. How I would have done the marathon is I would have ran it from Season 1, and since we stay with the half-hour format, do Season 1, 2, 3, and 5. But maybe someday they'll get it set up, you know, maybe a true a Twilight Zone fan will get in there, have it run a little bit better. But still, you know, you can't complain. It's nice that the Sippy channel shows the Twilight Zone marathon. That's one good thing. So with that, let's go ahead and get started with Time Enough at Last. To start us off with, Mr. Serling.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Witness Mr. Henry Bemis, a charter member in the Fraternity of Dreamers. A bookish little man whose passion is the printed page, but who is conspired against by a bank president and a wife and a world full of tongue cluckers and the unrelenting hands of a clock. But in just a moment, Mr. Bemis will enter a world without bank presidents, or wives, or clocks, or anything else. He'll have a world all to himself, without anyone.
And now for the synopsis. Bemis is shown working at his post in a bank, reading David Copperfield at the same time, which causes an impatient customer to complain about being shortchanged by a dollar. As Bemis' day progresses, both his boss and his wife are shown to think his reading of books, they call it, a waste of time. At one point, his wife, as a cruel joke, asks him to read her poetry from a book he had. He eagerly obliges, only to find that she has drawn lines all over the text on the page. Next day, Henry takes his lunch and reading break in the bank vault, where he won't be disturbed. The camera shows the newspaper foretelling headline, "H bomb capable of total destruction." Moments later, loud explosions can be heard outside, violently shaking the vault and knocking Bemis unconscious. In the aftermath of the apparent war, he regains consciousness and emerges to find that he is the last person alive on Earth, everybody else having been killed by the bomb. He finds himself in a world of both abundance and emptiness, with food to last him a lifetime, but no one to share it with. As he is about to commit suicide, he sees the ruins of the public library. He investigates and finds that the books are still intact and readable. All the books he could ever hope for are his for the taking, and he finally has all the time in the world to read with no one to stop him. He sorts the books he intends to read for the next several years. Just as he reaches to pick up the first book, he stumbles and his glasses fall off and shatter. His glasses are extremely thick, indicating that he would be virtually blind without them. In shock, he picks up the remains of his glasses and said, "That's not fair. That's not fair at all. There was time now. There was all the time I needed." He bursts into tears, surrounded by books he can now never read. Just to let everybody know that any views are expressed by myself is that of me and not necessarily of the Talking Twilight Zone group. So let's go ahead and get started. Be sure to get your Twilight Zone DVD out. It is episode 8. And for people who have the Time Life VHS tapes, be sure you move ahead where you have the opening where it shows the title and gives the date. And when you get to before the music starts, just go ahead and pause it. So, if we are all ready, let's get it going here. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play. You know, it was always amazing with this opening is how we got different titles. And he kind of changes the words a little bit as he changes the openings. So now we open up on a bank. There's Bemis counting out the money. Of course, Bemis is played by Burgess Meredith. This is season 1, episode 8. It was directed by John Brom. Written by Rod Sterling, based on the short story. Original air date was November 20th, 1959. And the guest stars for this is Jacqueline DeWitt, who played Helen Bemis, and Vaughn Taylor as Carsville. You know, it's interesting if you're in a workplace, you know, they wouldn't allow you to read while you're working anyway. You're supposed to do it on your break. Uh-oh. He's sneaking up behind you. Look how thick his glasses are. Wow. I wonder how he was able to do this episode with his glasses so thick like that. Well, actually, they were magnifying lenses. And here's Rod talking, doing his narration. Kind of an upbeat music starting out with this. No, he's getting chewed out by the boss. This is considered a classic. A lot of people really enjoy this episode. Our reader. Unfortunately, I'm not a reader. I'm a watcher. I like watching videos or listening to audio, but my wife is the reader of the family. But I do read papers, newspapers. The man is berating the employee. The man. Time Up at Last was one of the first episodes written for The Twilight Zone and introduces Burgess Meredith to the series. He went on to star in three more episodes, being introduced as no stranger to The Twilight Zone in promotional spots for Season 2, The Obsolete Man. He also narrated in the 1983 Twilight Zone, the movie film, but it was uncredited, so that way he could be paid in scale. Can't see what he's seen in her, why he married her for. You know, he's kind of like, you know, one of these food junkies or somebody that always has to constantly hide something in a secret place. Uh-oh, caught. Red-handed. I like the character that Burgess Meredith is playing now as Bemis. Burgess Meredith was a pretty popular actor. He did theater, he did television and film, but he was more known on television and then later on in the cinema. He was also in the episode Mr. Dingle the Strong, where Meredith played the title character, a timid weakling, who, as the subject of a space alien experiment on human nature, suddenly acquires superhuman strength. And as I mentioned, he was in The Obsolete Man. And then the fourth one was the one of my favorites, Printer's Devil, where, you know, Meredith portrayed the devil himself. Uh-oh, he's go down, take his lunch break now. What's interesting, too, that he appeared in Rod's other series, Night Gallery. He played a couple roles in that one. But Burgess Meredith is well known as the Penguin character in the Batman TV series with Adam West. You know that him and Cesar Romero, who played the Joker, were the two most popular. And they were on the Batman series pretty much an equal number of times. Uh-oh, there goes the explosion. Nice way of shaking the vault up. Now, I wonder if the vault is lead-lined. See, during this time, they had, like, the underground bunkers. Or, you know, in case of nuclear explosion, because you gotta remember, this is during the time 5960 heading up to the Cuban Missile Crisis, and a lot of people were building these bomb shelters because of the missile scares in the future. I think it's amazing that the vault was intact, but the building was gone. Just shattered in pieces of wood. But that must have been a sturdy staircase. Seems like the staircase held pretty good. But I guess the blast was so powerful that it took care of the people. I like the way they have the scenery set up in this to make it, you know, look like it was a atomic bomb, hydrogen bomb that went off. Because you would think even in a blast, there goes the tape recorder. Oh, you do see. You see his hand. Wow. That's cool. They did show a body part. Nice. He also, Burgess Meredith played in a short-lived series called Probe Control. From 72 to 73, he played VCR Cameron in the television movie pilot, and then in Search, the TV series. The name was changed to avoid conflict with a program on PBS at that time. The series that Meredith was in was a World Security Corporation private agency which, among other activities, fielded a number of detectives equipped with high-tech equipment, including a tiny TV transmitter called the Scanner. Let Rod talk here. And it's nice that they inserted this in here. Now, is this the only time he done this, or was there other times that he did? I just love how they have this set up. Oh, she's dead. If your house is gone. I can't believe it must have been a big sound stage where they shoot this at. Because look at all the wreckage and everything. This is great, you know, for a 1959 series to do this. Put a lot of foundation on his face to make it look like his face was burnt. Well, anyway, getting back to what I was saying about that TV series that he was in. There was one episode that he was in the Search series where he got kidnapped and having to escape from a torture chamber without any of the tools carried by probe agents. I've seen a lot of movies that Meredith was in, and one of my favorite ones, if people do remember, was a movie called Magic with Anthony Hopkins. And he was good in that movie, so whenever you get a chance, pick up the movie Magic. Also, he played the coach in the Rocky movies. Come on, Rock! You always talk like this! But I ain't going to name all his movies. He's been in a ton of them. But just to mention a few that I seen him in. But some other ones he was in was Day of the Locusts, Foul Play, Clash of the Titans he was in. That was in 1981 with Harry Hamilton. He was in that one. He was in Santa Claus, the movie. I think he played Father Christmas in that one. And he ended his movie career with the Grumpy Old Men movie with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon. His last movie was Grumpy Old Men in 1995. He died in 97 of Alzheimer's. And also, not a lot of people that he suffered from bipolar, too. It's amazing how much of this stuff you can get into like a 20 5-minute episode here. Yeah, that's right. Cars don't start in an atomic explosion. Because it lets out a pulse. But it just shows the loneliness. And, you know, the way it ends, you know what's going to happen to Bemis. That eventually he may die of radiation poisoning. Kind of reminds you of the Last Man on Earth type movies, you know, the one with Vincent Price. Also, you have the Omega Man with Charlton Heston, and also I Am Legend with Will Smith. And that's true, you ain't gonna run out of food. You have plenty to eat. But the only problem is it safe to eat? Uh-oh. I have a gun, should I take my life? I like how Burgess is just such realism in this episode. One of my favorite ones coming up, especially now that we're in the second season, is 2. Looking forward to talking about that one with Charles Bronson and Elizabeth Montgomery. Oh, a ray of hope. Public library. You know, it almost looks like the same staircase that was used in the one with the angel Pip. Where you go up to the steps leading up to the file room. Uh-oh, he's getting excited. He found books. A nice place to visit is the one I was thinking about with Sebastian Cabot in there as Pip. But yeah, that's what the stairwells look like. Oops. You broke something. And this is, you know, a proper ending for this episode because, you know, now he's stuck with all these books, and he can't read them. You know, his glasses look like Harry Potter glasses almost. Nope. Didn't they tell you life's not fair? Best line. I love how this camera shot pulls out. Love this wide shot. Excellent episode. Filmed at MGM Studios. And the CBS ending here. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. That's it for Time Enough at Last. And next time we'll speak, we'll be together reviewing the next show coming up in the Talking Twilight Zone, and in that one we'll have the hamminess of William Shatner himself, and it's called The Nick of Time, episode 43 of season 2. So be sure to tune in for that. And now I want to leave you with a little something that I came across. I'm a big Frasier fan. I enjoy watching them, and I came across in season 4 of Frasier, they did kind of a little salute to Twilight Zone, so I'm going to play you that clip. It's called Mixed Doubles from season 4 of Frasier, and I hope you enjoyed the clip. And thank you for listening to the Talking Twilight Zone commentaries. Hopefully in the future I'll put some more together. But until next time, I leave you with the Twilight Zone Frasier clip. Thank you, everybody, and Happy New Year. Talk to you again later. Goodbye, everybody.
Just how, whenever you think you have your life figured out, something unexpected happens.
Sorry, forgot my keys. Oh, everyone, this is Rodney Banks.
Oh. Hello.
Dr. Niles Gray?
How do you do? The pleasure is mine. Flu season.
Can't be too careful.
Oh, this is Dr. Frasier Crane and his father, Marty.
Good to see you. Welcome.
And,
This is Adele Childs.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Well, we've just had the most wonderful day at the marina.
Oh, you got a boat?
Actually, no. I have an inner ear curvature that makes me prone to motion sickness. But there's a charming bistro there that serves the most exquisite... Not me.
Hello. Oh, I can't talk now, Duke. I'm in the Twilight Zone. Would like a coffee?
Oh, yes, that would be lovely.
Yeah. I'll give you a hand, Frasier.
What the hell was that? I think maybe we should put a little red mark on the real Niles so we can tell them apart.
Niles must be going nuts.
Can I lend you a hand?
Oh, no, that's fine, Niles. But wait a minute.
What do you think of Rodney?
Bit of a pretentious fop, wouldn't you say?
He doesn't remind you of anyone?
Remind me of anyone?
So sorry, but about my coffee, I neglected to mention that I like my milk steamed, but just a dollop of foam, such as might give the effect of a cumulus cloud reflected in a still pond.
Consider it done.
I want to kill myself.